Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, everybody, once again to the podcast. This is Tips from the Server Room, episode number 46 for May the 13th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and we're going to get underway. The show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it is here. Check it out at techpodcast.com. Please check out my website where you can comment on all these shows and leave me messages on the episodes. You can check that website out at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Also, as I said, comment on these shows. You can also leave me a voice message if you wish to do so. And that is at 724-701-0550. If do call in, please, if you have any questions or ideas for future shows. And you can also email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Once again, it's jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Folks, I'd like to tell you the beer this evening we are experiencing and enjoying this tonight is a Samuel Adams Summer Ale. If you want a nice lemon taste, a citric taste beverage, this Summer Ale is wonderful. And I think we talked about this before in a past show, but it's a wonderful beer, especially if you are mowing the grass or doing some yard work outside. It's a wonderful beverage to experience. We are streaming this tonight, and I got to turn this back down a little bit here. I'm just trying to adjust some audio levels here right now. So we are streaming tonight live on Livestream. If you want to check me out on Livestream, I do post this on Twitter. So follow me on Twitter, and you can follow me there, and it is at Technoman, TechNoMan. I'd be happy if you do follow me live there. So when we are producing the show at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday evenings, you can join me in there for the chat and, talk along a little bit with me and throw some stuff in the chat room. I'd love to hear from you there live. The first thing I have coming up for you tonight is a response to show number 45. Now, if you remember last week's show, I received some emails, which is wonderful. And I tell everybody, folks, I don't know everything there is to know about anything. I've just been doing this a long time, and I love podcasting. So I talk about your servers, your server rooms, server racks. And when I did this show last week, we talked about wireless networking and how to secure your wireless networking. And I think I might not have made myself as clear as I probably should have. The first thing we're going to talk about here is I want to clear up the comments that I used about MAC addressing, securing your wireless network with the MAC addresses. And I made that statement, and I made it very clearly that I do secure my wireless networks with MAC addressing for my small clients. Now, the small clients are in offices, and those offices are usually medical offices, and they are usually only about anywhere from 3 to 5 laptops on the wireless. Now, the reason I do that, I am under the very much belief and the assumption that if you have a wireless network that comes with a little padlock on it, guess what? People are going to try to crack your WEP security or your WPA. They're just going to try to do that. If you leave it open, if it appears to be open, people will try to get on your wireless and not do anything. They may even actually connect to the wire, but they won't go anywhere because if their MAC address is not in the table, then they're not going to go anywhere. They're just going to simply die right at that router if they even get that far. That is why I do it. Now, as far as our school system goes, where I have 700 laptops, 700 PCs on the nodes or 700 nodes, and multiple iPads. We have multiple Chromebooks at this point. And Jeez, we have an open wireless access for our students to log into that. Now, for that, we use a couple different security measures. First of all, on our main wireless at our high school, it is not secured. It is wide open, and that's because we didn't want to have to give the passcode out to the kids anyway. To me, if you make it too difficult to use, people will not use it. And if you work for a school or a college, think about this for a while. If not really a college, let's say if you work for a school, we're governed by the state to say that we must web filter. We must do our very best effort to hide the kids from anything that they shouldn't be seeing. And we do that by having a web filter activated. So if the student comes in with their iPhone or with their Android phone, or their iPad, and if they're on LTE or 3G or whatever, if we make it too hard to get on our wireless, guess what, folks? They'll just jump back over to the LTE or the 3G, and then they get to see whatever they want to see. So I made it very, very easy to get on our wireless. All they do is look at their device and pick students, and they're on the wireless, and they're up and running, and they're on the internet. Now, somebody said once, Jack, why don't you secure that wireless down to only make sure, or like have a VLAN set up where all they can do is get on the internet? Well, the reason that is because we set up a Ericom server. It's E-R-I-C-O-M, I believe it is. E-R-I-C-O-M. And I'm trying to get them on for a sponsor for the show. But they are actually a company that creates a server-based, like an RDP. So like a remote desktop protocol. We loaded it on a Windows 2008 server, 2008 R2 server, and the students can get there just by simply typing in a web address. So if I have them set up to be on a VLAN and only go out to the internet, what I'm going to lose is that ability to serve up that Windows workstation environment for those students on their own devices, such as their iPads or Android tablets or whatever. It doesn't matter what they have. The main reason we created that environment, that server, is because of the Chromebooks. Because some of the students, well, you know, it's high school, so you have to learn things like Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, and Microsoft PowerPoint. We need to have those available for our students. So with that said, we built that server, and we let that reside on there. We also now loaded some programming languages on that server, so it's pretty... it's pretty amazing to see it work because you just, like I said, type a web address in any browser, you log in, you put your server credentials in, and you go right in to the actual server itself. And that is exactly how that works. So we have to have that available. If you hear a lot of screaming on this podcast, I don't know if this microphone's picking it up, and I don't believe it is, but the family is downstairs watching a NHL playoff game. And as you see, I'm here because I wanted to broadcast this show to everybody this evening. They are actually watching right now the Rangers and the Penguins is who they are currently watching. So if you hear that, I do apologize. So I wanted to make that very clear that I am not using MAC addressing in my school. In our elementary center, we use WPA security. And somewhere along the line, somebody, and I'm going to read an email to you that I received, somebody told me that somewhere along the line, I created or I said that WPA is only used by government agencies. And I don't remember saying that. And if I did, I apologize. WPA is much more secure than WEP. Now, WEP is W-E-P. Many people have it turned on in their homes, and it is fairly easy to crack. But let me tell you something, folks, about this fairly easy to crack. I want to make this perfectly clear. As much as us technology folks, anybody listening to the show, I would be really concerned if you come into my network with a laptop because I find you to be very highly skilled and I find most people that listen to the show to know a lot about networking and wireless security. But the average everyday person that goes to McDonald's for a cup of coffee and opens up their laptop or brings their iPad up are not going to try to crack into their network. The average person is just not going to do that. May you get a 14-year-old child that does that? Absolutely. You might get a 14-year-old child that does that. But the majority of people do not and will not crack into your network. So don't be overly concerned about that. if you do run a something like a bank, if you do run some a high target area, target. See, I even said target and I didn't mean to, but the target stores, we know they got hacked from somewhere overseas. So it doesn't have to be somebody sitting in your parking lot with a laptop. When you're on the internet, we connect our computers and we rely on the internet to transport our data or large amounts of data back and forth between our stores and our central offices, we do have the possibility of having a breach and having an attack. What you need to do, you need to be very, very careful and have those firewalls set up. And I could talk to you for days about firewall security. If you have a firewall set up, go back. If you're listening to this on the way to work, log into it when you get to work and look at all of your allowances. Look for your allows and your denies and make sure that, because we've had, when we went back to look, you know, we've had access to certain IPs that we don't even use anymore. So that needs to be revisited from time to time. And you need to keep that firewall cleaned up so you're not attacked or breached. Anyway, so that's it for that part of it. Now, I am going to, I got this email from a listener to the show. And I was very happy to get it. And, you know, he actually apologized at first for sending the email. And I said, don't apologize because, again, I don't know everything. I'm not the soothsayer sage, the all-knowing. I'm just the guy that likes to spread the word of technology around through podcasts. And I enjoy talking to you folks out there as much as I enjoy getting these emails back. So if I say something and it's kind of off base or off kilter, then email me and say, Jack, let's try to straighten this out and put some knowledge behind what you're saying. And that's fine. I appreciate that. Now, what we're going to talk about here, we are going to read this email to you from a listener, and his name is simply Todd. Now, Todd writes, because I try to get Todd on the show, so that's why this first part starts out the way it does. I wanted him to call in to Skype in, and we were going to have a conversation about this. But he explained it very well in his email, and I'm going to go ahead and read this to you. It says, first of all, I can ramble on and on with my friends on computer security, but I hate to be wrong with people I cannot respond to. I will leave the podcasting to the pros such as you and Mike Smith. And we all know Mike Smith from Mike's Tech Show. It's a very great show. If you haven't listened to that, I would recommend you go over and check that out. Many companies do radius authentication using a user cert and a password. The company I work for uses radius, but it has two steps. We first authenticate the device with a cert or a certificate that is on all of our devices, and then we authenticate the user with a user cert and a password when they log into the domain. At home, I use routers with DD, WRT, and WPA2. Now, if you're not familiar with DD and WRT, it is an open source project, I believe. I played with it before. And what you do is you change the firmware on your wireless gear at home, your wireless router. It'll tell you what models it's good for. And you flash your firmware, and then you're running DD, WRT, on your wireless device. Now it says, I had Open Radius running and the family had to authenticate once a month with a new password. Now that's great because you don't have your neighbors jumping on your wireless. Now this did not go over well with the WAF. This gentleman, Todd, you are very, very, you have a very vivid imagination, but this is a wonderful acronym. WAF. Wife acceptance factor. I really like that. As one time radius was down and I was on a business trip. The reason I wrote you to begin with, it seems like you were stating that only government should use WPA for security. And that is not what I wanted to put out there to you folks. I don't believe that WPA is only for governmental agencies. And I don't know how that came across. I might have to go back and listen to show number 44 and maybe see what I said when I was rattling on about it. I understand it is frustrating when you are looking for wireless and everywhere it is locked up. I think all consumers and companies should have a guest network, and I believe we all should share our connections, but that can have a risk if you do not have content blocking. knew of a company that their guest network was used by a person who downloaded child pornography. The company had a visit by the police with search warrants, and the admin had to prove it was coming off of their guest network. Anyway, we all need to make the best effort to protect our networks, because if we did get hacked, if you can at least prove you made the best effort, your reputation will bounce back quicker. It says, I will stop writing, but I will continue to enjoy your show. I love listening at work. Todd, thank you so much for that email. And we've had a couple different correspondence back and forth with Todd. And I really, really do appreciate the email there back and forth. And I wish I could have got him on the show, but that's okay. We are here to spread everybody's word. And Todd sent that in. And now we got the word moving on there. So very, very good, Todd. Great email. Again, the governmental agencies, if you remember, the WPA is not just for governmental agencies. It is for everyone. Now, this one's going to come to you from a YouTube viewer. Now, you may know, and many of you have actually found some of my work on YouTube, and that is at 42 Technoman, where you can see different server videos that I've created. Hi, Jack. I've watched all your videos, and I've learned a lot of things about Windows Server 2008 R2. I really appreciate it. I am setting up a Windows Server 2008 for a friend of mine for a small home network with 6 laptops running Windows 7 Pro. After configuring Windows 7 and installed Active Directory domain services and DNS server, I got a small problem. If I set up the server IP as a dynamic one, everything works fine. I can access the internet, and all the laptops get IPs from the router's DHCP. But when I set up the server with a static IP, I get local network only. I see a couple of videos where people talk about using a second NIC in the server, but don't think that is necessary. My question is, how can I assign a static IP from my server without having any issues to browsing the internet, at the same time assigning all laptop static IPs? Thanks a lot in advance. And here was basically my response. We're going to read down through this stuff. Using two NICs in your server is not a solution, unless you're trying to provide either load balancing or you are splitting services up on your network itself. Then I can understand where you would do that. And what I mean by splitting services, what I've done in the past with that is very simply, I've actually had stuff like two different websites. If we're splitting, when I own my own internet service, we would have multiple hosting. And I wanted to provide each individual hosting package with its own IP address. And at that point, we did have multiple network cards in it. But today, with virtualizing your servers, remember, you can create virtual NICs. So each of those NICs can have their own IP address. And a lot of people don't realize you can run multiple IP addresses through one NIC. And all you have to do is give that computer multiple IP addresses and assign those over. So using two network cards is not always the solution. You don't need to do that. What you do need to worry about, though, is this issue of the static IP thing. Now, I do receive a lot of emails on this issue. I've never run across the issue myself because I've always kept all the computers on the same subnet. That is vital. Keep all the computers on the same subnet. If you get those computers, and some people like to do that for some reason, they'll have a subnet of, let's say, 192.168.1.10 on their router handing out IP addresses. They'll go to their server, and they want that server for some reason to be 10.16.1.5. Obviously, it's not going to get out to the internet because it can't go through that route to get out to that internet. And that is just a simple fact of it there. We did, for some reason, lose the live stream, but that's okay because the podcast is still moving on. And we're still going along here and working well with the podcast. Now, with that said, what I like to do is go to my server and I give it an IP address. I usually set my router first, or my firewall or whatever you're at the end with there. And I set that first to the lowest subnet address I can find, usually 192.168.1.1 or 192.168.0.1, whatever, however you want to work that out. And the gateway for all of your computers must be that firewall or that router address. That is the gateway. That's how it works. And that's what you should have on it there. So that is your gateway. We're just going to restart the live stream here for the live stream folks, but we'll wait and see here when it comes back up. And anyway, so we'll just keep on moving on. I'm sorry, folks. So anyway, that is the solution. Now, if you're still having access with your computers accessing the internet, what I would try to do is I would try to change the DNS server address to give it an outside DNS server. And the way we do that is very simply, I use OpenDNS. So give your server the address, the DNS server, 208.67.220.220 and 208.67.222.222. That's the two OpenDNS server addresses that I like to use. And they seem to work very well. Now, when you do that, here's something to remember. Whenever you put that together, and when you do that, what you want to be able to do is hard code that into your DHCP settings. So in your DHCP, you have the scope, and then you have the scope properties that you need to add in there. Add those DNS servers in there. The reason we do that is you shouldn't have to give static addresses out to your clients. Face it. Where I work, I have 700 nodes plus iPads plus Chromebooks. If I had to static all those addresses, I would not be here talking to you right now, and I wouldn't be able to sleep at nights because I would be at work setting up static IP addresses. And that is time consuming. That's why we have DHCP. What you also might be experiencing, and so many people set up a little network and set up their workstation or a server, and they don't catch this concept. The concept is that you have to make sure that you shut one of your DHCP servers off. If you have two, they will fight each other to hand out an IP address. That is their job. If I, in fact, can get into my router and my router or my firewall, and if I can reserve IP addresses, because there is sometimes I reserve them to MAC addresses too. And then what you'd have to do then is you have to make sure that's in your DHCP settings so that your settings will actually hand that out. But remember, you don't want two DHCP servers running at the same time. That's just bad news. Okay, so we know now that we don't want the two DHCP servers running. I think I beat that into everybody's head out there. We all understand that we don't want those two DHCP servers running by any means. But yeah, you got to try that. You have to. Hopefully that will help you out. I did email this listener back and said, look, you need to set this stuff up and possibly get that going. There is no reason if you have first of all, if you set a domain controller up, an Active Directory server, and if you watch my videos, you'll know that you should right away give it a static IP address. Don't allow that to pick it up from the router and then turn it on. And make very certain that server does not have DHCP running when also the router has DHCP running. Turn one of them off and you'll be just fine. Okay, folks. So tonight I thought I would talk a little bit to you about traffic monitoring. Monitoring your networks. This is huge. None of us have time for it, but it's something that I thought I would cover with you just to give you some basic idea of some tools, how those tools work, and how you should use those to monitor your network switches. Now, the first thing you want to do is, we all know that a switch, and this is a good one for you too, whenever I interview interns from a local college that we get these interns from, I ask them this simple question. What is the difference between a network switch and a network hub? Here is a few answers. One has more pretty lights than the other. No lie. College-trained technologist, this is what I receive. next major answer that I received. One cost more money than the other. Okay, naturally, that is very much true. One does cost more money than the other. All right, so the next one I get is one is smart and one is dumb. All right, so all these are very great answers for a network switch. None of them actually pertain to the answer that I'm looking for when I'm doing interviews. But anyway, I give them the opportunity to go home, do a Google search, and email me back the correct answer. Why? Why does one cost more than the other? Why does one have more pretty lights than the other? I have no clue. And why is one smart and why is one dumb? What do you mean by that? Anyway, we know that a switch has circuitry in it. And what it does, the main purpose of the switch and the reason it costs so much more money and the reason it's so smart is because each port is segregated from the other ports. If we have the old hubs that we used to put in all over the place, we used to get a lot of network collisions. And the reason we did that is because everything's transmitting across all those at one time. All those signals are getting crossed and flipped through there at one time. That is why we have that opportunity of data collisions. And that is why we have that opportunity of having a bad crashed out network. Anyway, so being that each port is individualized, we know that we must, to be able to sniff the traffic on our network. A lot of people miss this, and they'll take one of these software packages we're going to talk about in a second here. They take a software, they put it on their laptop, they plug their laptop network cable into their switch, and nothing happens. Remember, because the only thing you're going to see at that point is the traffic coming between your laptop and whatever you're talking to, the internet, the server, or whatever you're actually talking to. What we need to do is mirror the port. And you probably heard that terminology before somewhere. You're like, ah, mirror the port. I know what he's talking about. And what I like to do is my main firewall on our number one switch in our rack. So the first switch at the top is where my firewall is plugged into. So I know that the last point out of my server or out of my networking gear, the last point of exit is port one, switch one. So what I wanted to do was I took the port right below that, let's say port 14 or whatever the heck it was, and I mirrored port 1. That way I can plug my laptop in and all the traffic now that's going out through port 1, I'm now capturing with my software. And it is a ton of traffic. I was talking to my work partner today and we were discussing this topic for the show. And he said that has to be a humongous amount of traffic. And it was a very, very lot of traffic, tons of traffic. And what I did was I captured that. You have to set a time. Say, look, we're going to capture it for 1 hour. We're going to capture it for 4 hours. Whatever your network traffic is, you don't want data overload. In technology, with the technology world today, I say that everybody's on data overload. We have so much data and we have no way to compile it. We have no way to troubleshoot what we're looking at because we try to look at too much. So break your network traffic down into segments. We find that 1 hour is plenty. What I do then is I look for certain port traffic. Let's say, for instance, here's one that caught us one time that we had to start doing some network traffic monitoring. We had a rogue computer on our network. For some reason, somehow, it received some spyware or something, and it became its own little mail server, and it started sending out spam messages at anywhere from 1,000 to 5,000 per minute. My internet upstream provider called me and said, look, Jack, you have a huge amount of data coming through your network, and it is pounding our servers. Either fix this or we are shutting down your internet line. Well, I had to fix it quickly. So I went to my switch, and that's where I got involved with all this monitoring stuff. Because I am not a network forensics guy by any means, but I am a guy that will figure it out and come to the solution that we need to the issue that we are having. So what we wanted to do was we set up our first switch and I did a little bit of reading on the internet and said, look, I got to mirror the port. I understood what that meant. So I mirrored port one because I wanted to see where this traffic is coming from. Because there's no way, folks, you're going to go to every computer out of 700 and touch each one and figure it out. It's just not going to happen. What we did was we captured internet traffic for about an hour, maybe 2 hours, and then I was able to filter it with the software. And I filtered it based on port. So I said, what on my network is trying to talk out of port 25? And we found the rogue computer. We actually found its internal address because it was sending the emails out through our internet connection, and we were able to actually take care of that actual computer. Here is something else. If you're using an outside mail service, and we talked about this a few shows ago about internal mail hosting or external mail hosting, we have all of our emails hosted through Google Apps. If you, in fact, do Google Apps, you do not need port 25 going out of your network. It's just because if you're using the web interface, you're doing all your email on their servers. You're not doing it from your actual location. Even if you use client software, because we've been playing a lot lately with the with all the iCloud configurations and the iCloud syncing for all of our Apple users at work. And in looking into that, we can use our mail client on our Macs, and Google Apps does not use port 25 to send email. So it is a non-normal port. So what I did, I went to my firewall and I disallowed. I said, look, deny all outbound port 25 traffic. When I did that, I made certain that I'll never have that issue again. So I won't get that phone call and say, look, Jack, we are shutting down your internet connection. So I don't have to worry about that anymore. These are instances why you want to know what's going across your network and why you want to monitor your traffic at certain times. And folks, believe me, I am much like you. We do not have time for this. And I understand that. We don't have time to go in there and be able to sit and watch our networks like we want to. And I know you want to do it, but we just don't have time to do that. So we're going to talk about some tools I found to do some network monitoring. There's only one of these in this list that I've actually used, that I know how to use, that I can actually comment on. Now, the first one is Microsoft Network Monitor. And this is a handy tool for troubleshooting network problems and applications of your network. The main feature includes support for over 300 public and Microsoft proprietary protocols, simultaneously capturing sessions, and a wireless monitor mode for sniffing out actually wireless mode traffic. Now, I've looked at the Microsoft one. I haven't really used it that much because I've chosen to use this third-party utility that I have found. The next one we're going to talk about is one called Bandwidth D. Bandwidth D looks really promising because it looks at all of your different internet protocols, and it looks at how much bandwidth you're using on your protocols. So these are very nice. If you're running to that instance, and we've ran into this before, especially when we had limited bandwidth, where our internet traffic every day at about noon was going down to barely nothing, to the point where our teachers couldn't teach class. And we had to try to figure out what is going on with this bandwidth. So we started doing some monitoring. We started doing some packet capturing. And we found that it was the students playing Flash-based games, if you can believe that. Our library was filled up at that time. Our cafeterias was filled up at that time. And the Flash-based games was actually starting to bring down our internet bandwidth to the point where teachers couldn't teach. So that is a very nice program. It's called Bandwidth D. And I put links to these in the show notes tonight so you can get to these websites and you can dig around. And this first one is like 20 free networking tools. And then there's another one that has 5 free networking tools we'll talk about. The next one is called EasyNet Monitor. EasyNet Monitor just allows you to monitor your network very easily. It's just an easy monitor. It says it's a super lightweight tool. And most of these I found they run on Windows. So if you're running it, and I'm sure you have a Windows server somewhere to put this software on and to use it to monitor your traffic, and you can do that. The next one is called CAPSA Free. It's CAPSA Free. It's a network analyzer tool that allows you to analyze your network traffic. You troubleshoot your network issues, and you analyze your packets. Now, it includes free support for over 300 network protocols. And this also includes MSN and Yahoo messaging filters. email monitor, and auto saving. You can also customize your reports and your dashboard. It looks pretty promising, and you know, might have to play with something like this. The next one is called Fiddler. Fiddler is a web debugging tool that captures HTTP traffic. So if you run your own web server, this might be a tool for you to use. I do not. We tend to want to host our packages off-site because I don't want to be an ISP guy anymore. I did that for enough years. The next one is called Network Miner. Network Miner captures network packets and then purges the data to extract files and images. That's pretty cool. It looks pretty neat. I was going to play with this one today, and I didn't have enough time to set up on our servers. It's called Pandora FMS. It's a performance monitoring, network monitoring, and availability management tool that keeps an eye on your servers, applications, and communications. It sounds wonderful, and it's a tool that I want to start experimenting with. The next one is Zenos Core, Zenoss Core. It's a powerful open source IT monitoring platform that monitors applications, server, storage, networking, and virtualization to provide availability and performance statistics. Now, folks, let's back this up for a minute. The reason we want to monitor our networks, the reason we want to try to capture stuff, and I'm looking at one time we used one application. I don't know if I'll hit on tonight or not, but we tried to set it up, but there was a lot of manual configuration, and I just don't have that much time to do manual configuration. But what we are looking for is something to monitor our network. Let's say, for instance, we are monitoring all of our network nodes, and we have a lot of laser IP printers out on our network. I want something, for whatever reason, if that printer loses connection to the network, if something happens to just the overall network connection to that printer, I want to have a text message sent to my phone. Boom, printer 35 is now offline for some reason. When you monitor your network, when you do the job that we do, it's our job to create 99.9% availability. And that is what we strive for on our network, and we generally can hit that every day. Something's going to happen occasionally that something's going to break. So never give 100%. Never do that. But what we want to do is 99.9% of availability of all hardware on your network. And reason you want to do that, the reason it's nice to have all the managed switches is because you can assign those IP addresses and you can watch your switches. So if something happens on your network, we want to know about it before the phone rings. That's my goal. I love that ability to do that. That's why we talked a few weeks ago about the Meraki Wireless. Meraki, if it loses contact from the cloud controller back to one of my access points, I get an email that says access point number 13 is no longer available on your network. That way we can go out and we can fix that right away. We don't have to wait for somebody to call and say, the wireless isn't working. I love that ability. So that's why we want to monitor your network traffic. The next one in our lineup is called PRTG, Network Monitor Freeware. Again, it's a nice application. You could check it out. The next one's called The Dude. We played with it. The Dude is a network monitoring tool that monitors devices and alerts you when there is a problem. See, this is one of those nice things. There's a little bit of manual configuration. The next one is called Splunk. Splunk is a data collection and analysis platform that allows you to monitor, gather, and analyze data from different sources of your network. Event logs, devices, services, TCP, UDP, traffic, and etc. So there is another nice tool for you to use. And again, the object is, I would give yourself at least, let's say 3 hours a day for 1 week for this project. This is a project that you're going to do, folks. This is project-based. There's no way you're going to do this in 1 day. Don't give yourself 6 hours and say, I'm going to pick one and it's going to be my favorite. Play with each one of these and learn the tool and say, look, this one will work for my situation. And what I'm thinking of doing is once I find something that will monitor my network visually, I'm going to put a 40-inch or maybe 42-inch, whatever, flat-screen TV above my desk, and I'm going to have that monitoring my traffic all day long. So if I ever look up and I got an alert, and if I got audible, it would even be better. Maybe it's not an alarm in my office, but I'll look up at the screen, and if there's a red alert, I'll know right away what I can do to fix that. That's my goal. That's where I'm trying to get to. The next one we've used a few times, and it's really nice because sometimes you have devices on your network. We run into this. Did you ever get a computer that is working normally every day? One day somebody goes to log on and says, I'm sorry, there's an IP conflict on the network, and their computer just won't work. So what you want to do is you want to take the IP that their computer had. Maybe you had that one static or whatever for the reason. And you take that IP and use this next program. Program is called Angry IP Scanner. You put your starting IP address in there, and you put your ending subnet address in there. And folks, it will search your network and find every IP address and what is connected to it. It's an amazing little piece of software. And the next one we're going to look at here is called NTOPNG. Now, it means next generation. How they got that out of it, I have no idea. It's the latest version of a popular network traffic analyzer called NTOP. NTOPNG will sit in the background and gather network traffic, then display network usage information with statistics within a web UI. So again, this might be something you want to look at, but I need something to monitor my end stations, my end clients. The next one's called Total Network Monitor. It continuously monitors hosts and services on your local network, notifying you of any issues that require attention via a detailed report of the problem. It quickly displays colors in green, red, and black, and it quickly shows you whether the probes are successful probing or not. Here's something to think about, too. This is something I don't want to get involved with. We used a piece of software before, and again, I can't remember the name of it. I wish I could, but where we had to put a small probe or a client on every workstation on the network. Now, once we put this on the first 20 or so, we started thinking and said, look, wow, why don't we push this out as a package? And we did, and we loaded it. I don't want extra overload or overhead on my clients. And I know this is just a small little thing that this software is talking to it back and forth, which is cool, but I don't really want that client running all the time on that computer. I just don't want that to happen. And with all the thing anymore about the distributed networking, how do you know if you're not putting that on that client and somebody else is using that computer's power somewhere else when the screensaver is lit up? I don't know. I'm sure you can block it on the firewall, but hey, I'm just giving you a word of caution. The next one is called NetXMS. It's a multi-platform network management monitoring system that offers event managing, and it offers a whole lot more. We're going to start going through these just a little bit faster because I don't want to drag on too long because you're probably almost on your way to work or people listening to me live right now. I don't want to keep you up all night. The next one is XYMON. It's a web-based system designed to run on a Unix-based system. So if you're good with Unix, that might be something you want to look at. Wireless NetView is another one. Zeris Wi-Fi Inspector. This one looked promising. I didn't play with it. And here is my grand poobah, my all-the-time go-to software that I use to monitor, or to not monitor, but when I have an issue, I use this to find the issue and try to dig down into it. It is called Wireshark. I'm sure you heard of it. It is like the grand poobah that everybody teaches in all these colleges. And it just simply works. I like it because you can capture packets for an hour or two, and you can filter based on port, based on pretty much whatever you want to filter on. And port number, I mean the TCP port specifications, such as 80. Maybe you want to see all your web traffic. Maybe you want to do 8080. Maybe you want to do port 25, port 110, whatever. You catch the idea. Maybe you want to find out, who's using an FTP program on my network? Let's scan for port 21, and you will be able to find that availability. So that is my grand poobah go-to, is Wireshark. And again, if you didn't write these down, don't worry about, and I don't want you to write them down during the show. I want you to just listen. But you can put these, this link will be in the show. So you will find show number. We are on show number today. What did I tell you we're on? This is terrible, and I don't remember what show number I'm on. That happens, though, when you're doing podcasting. Show number 46, and right below that, you'll see the links for these two sites that I used tonight to discuss this with you. The next one is called OBSERVIUM, O-B-S-E-R-V-I-U-M, and it's an auto-discovering PHP, MySQL, SNMP-based network monitoring tool. So this is another great tool. It's very, very graphical looking and looks pretty cool. The next one is called Gangela. It's G-A-N-G-L-I-A. Gangela, whatever. We will go with that. It's a scalable distributed monitoring system focused on clusters and grids. This is the one that we set up before, folks, and you may have heard of this one before. It's called Spiceworks. I simply love Spiceworks. It is a web-based system. It says in here in the write-up that you do have to put up with some ads because that's how they make money. And, you know, so every now and then you will see an ad. But it is very graphical. It is one of those systems where you can set up on a computer and you put all together. It runs on your IIS, basically, or you can put on a Unix or a Linux system. And it will do a lot of auto-discovering. And then you can go through and you can actually name each device. So it's very, very graphical, and it looks really nice. So you can put that on a big screen monitor or TV and watch that. Zabbix, it's Z-A-B-B-I-X, is another one. These are open source softwares. And that's it. That's the last one I have for you there. So, again, it's very nice software. If you know of any more, by all means, you can definitely email me and let me know if you find any more of those out there. I would love to hear about it. Maybe you're using something to monitor your network. And again, I'd like to hear about that, what you're actually using out there, because there is so many tools, and I don't know what the best one is. I just know what we have played with, and that's the key element there. What have we actually used in our network? But I'm sure you can come across with a lot of better stuff out there, or maybe even stuff that you actually used. I can tell you, I did have for the last piece of the show, I have a couple websites, and I'll just put these links in the show notes there. These are not companies I've used, but there are paid companies out there, and you might even just want to do a Google search on it, for paid companies to monitor your network. And they do this for a fee, but they'll come through the internet, they'll actually map out your network, they'll see everything on your network. So you do have to trust these companies to say, hey, look, they are very reputable companies. Make sure you do your homework. But they will monitor your network. And that's very nice from their standpoint and for your security, because if you're at home and you have a 24-hour business, say you work for a factory or a production company, and at 3 in the morning something goes down, they will notify you before anybody else knows that it happened. So you could either maybe remote in and remedy it, or you can go in and fix that up to make it all better and make it better for the workers. So there is companies out there that will monitor your network for a fee. Folks, I want to thank you very much for signing up for my server courses. All of you out there have been signing up for these Windows Server courses. It's been going very well, and I do appreciate you coming on board. And from all the great comments, I know that everybody is learning something new. Or something maybe they're refreshing in their mind about Windows Server that they used to know and they kind of let it slip aside, but now you're picking that back up. Also, remember, if you don't have high-speed internet, if you're listening to this podcast, and I used to listen to a lot of them, so people say, Jack, if people don't have high-speed internet, they wouldn't listen to your podcast. That is not true, because before I had high-speed internet, I did actually download podcasts at work, and I'd put them on my, at that time, it was my iPod. And I would listen to them on the way home in the car, or I would listen to them at home. So I also have DVDs available from my Windows Server courses. You can check those out. They are for sale, and they're at jackstechcorner.com. Click the little pull-down menu on the right, and you can actually sign up for those. Now, if you want to learn about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2, or VMware ESXi, you want to virtualize your servers, and you're like, geez, I don't know where to start. You want to take one of my server courses. These courses take you from install to administration. I call it from A to Z. You can sign up for these courses at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Click the little pull-down link at the very top of the page. It says online courses, and then you click on that, and that will take you to the online courses where you can sign up. Now, once you sign up, all you'll do is watch a video, and you take a short quiz. It's very easy to do. So you watch a video, take a quiz. Once you complete the course, I will mail you a certificate in the mail, and that's good for looking for jobs. People put them with their resumes. People hang them in their offices and say, look, I know Windows Server 2012. We're ready to upgrade. And they use those to show their boss to get reimbursed, because most companies will reimburse you for the course anyway. So if you want to use it for that. Once again, please sign up for that at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Folks, I want you to have a great work week. Thanks for joining me. And remember next week to catch me on livestream.com. And I will post that link in my Twitter. So it will go out for as a Twitter message right before the show, the main link that you can click on and come join us live. And that's 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday evenings. And I'd love to have you in there. So follow me on Twitter. And that's at Technoman, T-E-C-H-N-O-M-A-N. If not, we'll see you signed up soon in the Windows courses. And I'll talk to you next week. Take care, everybody. And bye for now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.